Welcome back to Rock Under Fire. It feels a little strange saying that. After what, Pat? What, like a year?
About a year, right? I heard you missed us. We're back.
So, what's up, man?
Same old, same old. Dealing with the coronavirus fucking lockdown of 2020.
I guess we're back doing this podcast unexpectedly, but we may actually be doing something for the good of humanity. Coming to the aid of people's boredom in the middle of this pandemic lockdown of sorts. One thing that's going to be noticeably different for our listeners is that we're not recording in the same room. We're actually doing this on cell phones from two different places.
Well, welcome to the world of technology.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do about you not having that trebly tinny sound of a phone call. Technology is pretty good these days.
It's been our friends on the show, certainly.
I mean, we did some pretty crazy things in order to talk to people on the phone.
Early on, we had some issues. We've certainly had our growing pains. We've certainly had those.
Miking speakers up and whatever, however we did that. But how are you holding up in all of this, man?
I'm holding up. I'm still working, actually. I'm going to work every day. They cut my hours, but still working, and I'm getting paid for the original hours I was supposed to get paid for. But, yeah, we're showing up every day.
All right, man, you're on the front lines.
Yeah, one of the essential, quote-unquote, folks.
Are you the paranoid type? Are you out there, like, every day saying, shit, man, I hope I don't bring this home? Or are you just kind of,
No, because for two reasons. One, my mom has moved out. She was living with me for a period of time after she retired. She moved out. So I don't have to worry about giving it to her.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And my daughter's 16. So, I mean, if she were to get symptoms, obviously I would take her to a doctor. You know, I'm more concerned about me because I'm diabetic. So they're saying that people with, you know, pre-existing conditions, you should need to look out for it. But look, I'm working around cleaning products a lot. Bleach, peroxide. If I were to catch it, I would be amazed. But hey, you never know. Yeah. I mean, at the rate this is spreading, who the fuck knows? It could be like The Walking Dead, where we all have it already.
Right.
And then
aside from our Saturday nights, man, the rhythm of your life hasn't really changed much. Then, aside from filling a lot of empty hours,
I'm playing a fucking ton of Xbox. And I'm listening to records. Me and Riley listened to the whole Wall album the other night, and I'm just chilling out. You know, I'll say this, though. If this is the fucking Walking Dead and this is the apocalypse and the end of it all, I will show up at Supertramp headquarters with my can full of gas and a handful of matches.
I think that building already burnt, man. The arsonist is a fire chief. Anyway.
Wasn't me. It wasn't me. I'm here to say it wasn't me.
Yeah, I'm keeping busy miraculously. Aside from, I see people, you know, I look on social media and it's a lot of people talking about how bored they are. You know, that sucks. You know, I'm lucky in that I don't experience boredom, man. You know, I seriously can't relate to being bored the way people are always talking about being bored. You know, I got mountains of work to finish, mountains of work to start.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, obviously in the house, you know.
Yeah.
Although, when was it? I think was it Tuesday night? I ended up going on a pretty big adventure, man. The other night, just after dinner, I went outside and took the garbage. I took the garbage to the curb, man. So, you know, I really exerted myself considering. So, I got my nephew during the week. He just turned six. I'm doing school with him.
Yeah.
Everything's online. You know, he's in kindergarten. I'm in touch with his teacher all day via that Class Dojo.
Yeah.
You know, that classroom app.
Yeah.
And we spend mornings doing the lesson plans. I don't know what the consensus is on the online learning thing yet, you know, because a lot of my friends are teachers. And but it's working pretty well over here.
The township superintendent, Dr. Ziga, feels that it's going pretty well. I think it's going pretty well. They even gave us the option to work through spring break so that the kids get out of school June 8th. Look, I don't think the kids are going back to school at all, period. And I don't want to bore everybody with this whole coronavirus fucking thing. But, you know, all I got to say about it is that, yes, the teachers are doing a good thing. And if I can relate any message to anybody out there, stay the fuck home.
Yeah.
No Saturday night. I mean, I haven't gone out for a drink in fucking 3 weeks. 4 weeks, almost a month.
Yeah, I was out. This is the third Saturday I'm home.
Yeah, it's the fourth for me because I don't think I went out like right before all this went down.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's giving me, I mean, it's not such a bad thing in the sense that it's given me a lot of time to do, you know, like I need to be in front of a computer. Most of my free time is in front of a computer doing, if it's not freelance writing or something of some sort, I'm finishing up my book. So I was lucky in a sense that I finally finished the book. I'm in editing and revisions right now, you know, and, for Rock Under Fire listeners, that's one of the reasons that our podcast has been out of commission for a while, among other things, you know, internal strife here and there, because we are, after all, a dysfunctional family. That's never been a secret. But yeah, man, I guess I would rather not make this about the pandemic thing or whatever, you know, but rather get people's minds off it for at least an hour a week. If we could get back to the discussion of music and everything that made our show what it was, that kept people coming back episode after episode, you know?
What I'm curious is, what are people listening to right now? Are they listening to music? I have found a new way to listen. Some of the dialect in this game that I'm playing on Xbox is quite boring and repetitive. I've found out that you could play Pandora in the background as you're playing the video game. So through my headset, I'm playing one of my Pandora stations, and I'm running around fucking killing people. In a video game, folks, in a video game. So I kind of fucking love it. Depending on the mood that I'm in, I can put on like some, you know, like Slayer or Metallica or something like that and blast through a bunch of people, or I'm in a real mellow mood, I just put on, you know, some like Pink Floyd or something like that. I've been listening to a lot of Pink Floyd lately for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, because you know I'm totally clueless with video games. I mean, video games to me is the Atari 2600. You know, it's still Activision games and stick figure basketball and things like that. That was the last time I played video games. Although I would love to get my hands on one of those old Ataris, man. I don't know if they're compatible with the new TVs, but the audio on a video game, if you're playing Pandora, does it conflict with the sound on a video game, or can you just turn the sound down? Like, you need the sound on a video game.
You can do one of two things. You can turn the volume down of the game that you're playing, or Pandora has a slider that you can say, okay, put this 70% above game volume and stuff like that.
So you can hear both.
Yeah, but I usually take out the whole game volume. I take the game volume out of the equation altogether because I don't need it.
Yeah,
at this point, I finished what they call a main storyline of a game, and now gamers out there will understand what I mean. We call it grinding. Just
right.
Going out there to grind new gear and you know, hook up with some of your friends and just take down different factions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because the game is set – I'll give you some history on it real quick. The game is set – it's called The Division, and the game is set in New York. Basically what happened was this guy created a virus, and he put it on money during Black Friday one year and crippled the fucking United States. New York is a shit show, blah, 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 blah. So we played all through that game. Second game, they did a sequel, and now the same thing had happened.
See, that sounds like real life, man.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. The second game is set in Washington, D.C., during the same time frame, but what happened in D.C., you know, during that event, that was different than New York, which is really cool. So now they, in turn, send us back to New York because there's an expansion pack to it, and New York, it's eerily creepy to what's going on in the world today. I mean, you're walking around New York, and now we're downtown New York, so it's, you know, Wall Street District and stuff. It's a shit show. There's like hazmat buildings with fucking, like, you know, hazardous material, garbage all over the place. It's unreal. And the the look of the game, and I know you'll appreciate this and remember it, it looks like either Manhattan and or the Bronx of the 70s and 80s, run down and fucking graffiti and just fucking garbage everywhere. It's unbelievable, the reality of it. And I'm just having a blast playing it.
Yeah, it's you know my obsession with New York in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's.
You would appreciate the graphics of it.
What else is going on? Like, what are? I mean, I'm clueless as to what's going on in music right now. I mean, I guess one of the, as we search for topics, and what I was thinking about, what could we possibly talk about when I was talking to you about putting this together?
Yeah.
You know, because we actually tried to address this issue in recent months, where we tried to talk about how we might continue doing Rock Under Fire if we ever decided to, mm-hmm. and how we would approach what we both felt was us having burnt out our mission statement. And for one of the reasons, I don't know about you, but I felt we hit a brick wall at a certain point. And, but you know, as long as we're going to do this, we are, and to anybody listening, if you have any ideas for topics, what you want us to talk about, right now we have a totally blank canvas because we're not on a regular schedule or agenda as if we were doing the show that we do year round.
Yeah, it's a clean slate. It really is. It's refreshing, I think, too. We're not, you know, you can stretch your arms a little bit and take, you know, we're outside that box. We broke the walls down, and you know, we're both music lovers. We're aficionados, if you will. I don't know. But we have a deep passion for music, and just to be able to talk about it again and talk about different things is great. And it's crazy because as we were talking about getting this back on, I did see a little piece, and I'll bring it up once we really get into the conversation. I saw a little piece about an anniversary of sorts for an album that's a really interesting topic, and I think we can kind of bounce that off of people. But yeah, once again, I'm in line with what Mike just said. It's open season. Give us something. Like, you know, let's discuss it. And you know, I'm going to start by saying if you're listening to this and you follow us on Facebook, you know, write down, you know, give us a note. What are you listening to? You know, what's are you listening to something that's depressing? You know, or are you listening to something that's upbeat? You know, I mean, summer's around the corner. Everybody, I'm sure, just wants to get the fuck out of the house, and you can't.
Yeah. I hate to even think about that at this point, man. Whether or not summer is canceled. You know, it's kind of early to talk about that, but I guess the big story, man.
I got Black Crowes tickets, man. I hope it's not canceled.
That kind of ties into maybe the only thing that I had in mind to talk about, which is probably the big story across the entire music world, is the fact that the industry is about to take a major hit.
Yeah.
As is, I guess, everything else. But you know, the cancellation of virtually every major concert tour, and I hate to say it, you know, you don't wish anything bad on artists or the people whose livelihoods depend on the industry, but, you know, in view of our corruption of Ticketmaster/Live Nation episode, you know, maybe this is some much needed reckoning for all the greed that's been imposed on ticket buyers over recent years, you know?
I'm going to tell you something else too, because it's depressing because yesterday should have been the first day of Major League Baseball. You got baseball. You have Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association, the National Hockey League canceled. They're done. They canceled. Okay. And now that's one thing. Those are full seasons that are canceled or half seasons. Here's the bigger thing. The fucking college basketball fucking March Madness is canceled. Do you know how much money? Can you even imagine how much money? I don't know the number that CBS has lost due to that not airing, the sponsorships that were involved in that. I mean, this is, if people don't look at it from like, hey, there's companies and industries losing money. Yes, the mom and pop shop is definitely losing money. They're taking the hit probably worse than anybody. But some of these huge corporations are just, they're bleeding right now. Bleeding.
Yeah.
We are fucking hurt. People don't even begin to realize how this is going to shape our economy moving forward.
You think this will force the ticket prices down, at least in the concert industry? I mean, it got insane.
That's a great question.
For the past decade, just total corruption, man.
People aren't going to have the money to do it. They're just not.
Yeah.
You know, you want to talk about getting a stimulus check and shit like that. That's not going to stimulate the economy. You know what? That check's going to go for me to my fucking mortgage. If I wasn't stimulating, I'm not going out and buying a fucking new TV or an iPad. I'm fucking going to pay my mortgage, you know what I mean? I'm fucking going to wipe your ass with those fucking hey, okay, I'm getting it. I'm you know, hey, I'm lucky I'm getting it. So, actually, speaking of summer concerts, New Jersey, See Here Now Festival, Asbury Park, fucking the hottest, the biggest rumor was that Pearl Jam was going to headline it, and sure enough, Pearl Jam is headlining it, and I really hope that that gets to go off. Pearl Jam and Asbury on the beach is just a good thing. They have ties there with Danny Clinch owning his gallery down there. I really hope that that starts happening.
When was that supposed to happen?
That's not until the end of the summer, September, I think, or August. Can't remember the exact dates. But,
wow.
You know, this is shifting stuff. So if there was already stuff lined up in Asbury that needs to be moved, the See Here Now Fest is like a two-day event, though. So it's going to be, you know, I think we're going to kind of be locked into that. But, you know, the PNC, that's right around the corner. The PNC Bank Card Center is a venue by us. That's that's an outdoor-type thing with lawn seats. You know, that could seriously be in jeopardy at this point because this season is just about to start. Yeah, Black Crow. I got Black Crows tickets, another band. That, you know, I got to say something about Black Crows. I'm real excited that they're touring. Super excited that it's them. They're doing their first album, which is a really cool bluesy record. And they're going to do some other hits as well. I have something to say about their drummer. The Black Crows to me has always been Chris and Rich. That's the Black Crows. It's their band. They started that band. They recruited musicians in and out throughout the years, this and that. So I guess the drummer that was with the Black Crows through the years had something to say about them touring with a different band. And he was kind of just being a little bitch about it. And I'm like, you know, hey, man, you can only ride on their coattails for so fucking long. It's Chris and fucking Rich. Were you bitching when they went on the Letterman show, just the two of them, to do She Talks to Angels? I didn't hear you bitching then. No, because you probably would have been fired out of the fucking band. But for this guy, it just sounded so petty for this guy to say, oh, they brought in all the musicians. They're just doing it for the fucking money. Of course they're doing it for the money. They're doing it for their love of music and their passion. But do you fucking think for 1 second they're not doing it because they're going to make a fucking lot of money for this tour? Come on, dude.
that's what they all do at this point.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, I mean, that's one of the things about losing revenue for selling product, because in terms of that one show that we did where we were talking about all of the different revenue streams for music, I mean, just album sales alone will fuck you up. Well,
they're getting
artists up, you know.
They're getting pennies on the dollar from what they were once getting as far as those sales.
It's probably percentages of pennies, you know.
Yeah.
It's like this money that used to come in steadily for a few decades is not there anymore. And when you have a couple of decades of that money being gone, it forces bands to go back out on the road, you know, and the older they get, at some point, you know, the Robinson brothers, you know, who, from what I understand, were not on the best terms.
Oh, they hate each other.
They
do not like each other one bit. You know, Rich, I think, part of it was Chris going to Hollywood. Chris kind of went to Hollywood a little bit. You know, he married a movie star, has a kid with her, and does his own little thing, but whatever. I don't know. They're brothers, though, first and foremost. And I think that's what they said in the interview. We're fucking brothers, you know? How long can you go on hating your brother?
And I'll tell it to Ray Davies and Dave Davies, man.
That's true.
Or the Fogarty's.
Yeah, the Fogarty's. I was just getting ready to say the Creedence guys, the Fogarty guys. I mean, he died. You know what I mean? And they just fucking, they died with a bitter, I can never imagine that. My brother's only 2 years younger than me. Have we gotten to some fucking drag him out, fucking the fight. Absolutely. But that's my fucking brother.
Yeah, man. I don't get it, man. I don't get it. You know, I cannot for the life of me understand the mindset that holds a grudge, man. Just people that let shit drag out. But
Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth are a prime example. Those two fucking, you know, they had to coexist for a little bit or they weren't gonna get fucking paid again. They, you know, but they're allowed to not like each other.
Yeah. They're, you know, I mean, and Dave came back. He was gone, and then he was away, and then he came back, and he was away again. You know, now from what I understand, Sammy is the bad guy. So now they don't talk to Sammy. So
that's because Sammy's lined himself up with Michael.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and whatever happened with him is
they just pushed him out. They didn't want him getting paid anymore.
I don't
know. You know what?
I'll never understand that, man. I'll never understand the way they screwed him, man.
Yeah, it was fucking horrible. First, you don't even know. Did you read the book?
Oh, yeah, man. It was one of the best books I've read on, as far as music goes. It's probably
really
the best music book I've read in years.
Yeah, it was really in-depth. Like, how they first told him, because they screwed him around earlier. They were like, look, we're cutting your fucking royalties. I mean, how do you just fucking do that? I'm glad we're talking about Van Halen, because I want to discuss something about them. But I'm really glad we're talking about them. But how do you come up to the guy and be like, yeah, you helped us create this whole fucking thing. We created this whole fucking beautiful Van Halen band. And now we're going to cut your royalties. What a prick. Well, amen, Dave. But Dave, I specifically got to talk about Dave. Because they can say all they want about Sammy Hagar. That motherfucker's 70 years old and still sings like he's got a fucking set of pipes from 25, 30 years ago. Dave, did you see any of the video of his fucking residency in Vegas? Now he's opening for Kiss, which everything's postponed. But did you see any of the video of his residency in Vegas?
I saw the one that everybody was talking about where he was really bad on the first, I think the first night or one of the first two nights.
He is not even fucking... he's not even fucking close. You know what he is? You know when you say, okay, there's a mirror image of himself? His mirror is one of those curved fucking things that you see at the carnival that makes you fucking short or wide or tall. Or that's what his fucking mirror image is right now, because he was fucking awful.
Yeah, I think he was, I guess he was having a pretty bad night.
Whatever. But he's still in the razzle-dazzle clothes. He's drinking from a bottle of whiskey. He's fucking Diamond Dave. It's fucking insane.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to his defense, and I'm not about to defend him because, I mean, look, I'm not.
I love the guy.
But he did sound a little bit better, maybe like a week or two into the Kiss tour. He was a lot better than he sounded with Van Halen. What, 2015?
I'll search
the last time that they toured.
Yeah, he was really bad then too.
And what's up with him physically, man? Is there? I know. What is he in his late 60s now? Is he pushing? Is he 70 yet? He's not 70 yet, is he?
I don't think he's quite 70 yet, but he looks like a Jewish grandmother.
He looks very stiff. There's something very stiff about the way he moves.
Yeah, you're right.
The way he doesn't turn his neck. And
like
he does
back brace of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of like when he moves, his entire body moves.
It's a fucking robot. It's robot David Lee Roth, folks.
Yeah. So if he turns, like he won't turn his neck to the right or left. Like if he looks to the left, his entire body turns to the left. You know.
And, boop, boop, boop. It'd be great if like his face fell off and like he saw the circuitry one night. Oh my God, the fake David Lee Roth. Like something out of $6 million man. Remember when they used to take the fucking plate off his face and there's all the robotics?
If we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
If indeed it was robotic David Lee Roth, they should make him sound better. That's all I'm going to say.
Better, stronger, faster. The man barely alive.
That brings me to another Van Halen point, though. The 5150 record just had its anniversary. This week? Last week? Sometime in March.
1986 to what? 2020 is what?
Jesus Christ.
Right. Was that 34 years?
Yeah, something like that. Wow.
Anniversaries sell, man. Anniversaries always sell on the tens, though. Like the 30th anniversary, 40th anniversary, 50th. That was another thing that I wanted to, like, that was another thing that I was getting really burnt out on related to Rock Under Fire is we did, you know, in 17, we did all of those 1977 shows.
Mm-hmm.
In 1967 and all, you know, we did Sgt. Pepper and all that stuff. And then
I know exactly where you're going.
Last year, 2019 it was just, you could not avoid the 50th anniversaries of everything 1969, you know? By the time we got back, it was like, all right, what are we going to do? Are we going to talk about something else? Or are we going to just like keep going in 50 years ago, you know, we're going to talk about Woodstock and we're going to talk about Abbey Road and we're going to talk about the Manson murders and we're going to talk about the moon landing. And it just got to the point where it was just, are we living in 2019 or are we just going to keep looking back?
Yeah.
So.
That 51, what were your thoughts on that 5150 record?
At the time I loved it surprisingly because, at the time, it was a really good album. It wasn't a great Van Halen album. I thought when, you know, Eat 'Em and Smile came out around the same time, I thought Eat 'Em and Smile was a much better Van Halen album, but 5150 was great for what it was. You know, it just had, it had great songs. I think it's one of Sammy's best albums. It's not a great, I don't know if it's a great Van Halen album as what we came to know as Van Halen. You know, we're dealing with two different bands and two different sounds. And, you know, I think people take it like almost too lightly where you talk about, oh, you know, Van Hagar. We take that kind of for granted. We just say Van Hagar without really thinking about it. But it really was two different bands.
Oh, it's a completely different record. A completely different record. Anything, you know, I mean, totally different than what you were used to listening to for them.
I don't think it's aged very well. It stopped evolving as anything that could be timeless. You know, it kind of just got stunted in the 80s, like where it just kind of got left behind on this, I don't know, you listen to it, it just sounds like it's almost a little dated.
I disagree with that. It's funny because I have about 3 or 4 songs on a regular rotation on one of my playlists, and Summer Nights still just gives me that really good vibe. And I'm like, wow, this is, and it's only recently that I started listening to it again, surprisingly enough. And is Dream still, whatever, kind of coin.
See, Dreams, I mean, Dreams to me, it just sounds like Top Gun or something. It's just
right,
got
right.
That, it's got that 80s vibe, yeah. And, you know, what? Why Can't This Be Love, that keyboard sound. It's, mm-hmm. You know, it's got that almost, for the same reason, like Dancing in the Dark sounds dated. You know,
but like Best of Both Worlds and Summer Nights and Good Enough. That's like,
I mean, yeah, they're all great songs. They're all great songs. It's just like I just don't feel it's. You know, again, I'll never deny that it's a great album. It's a great album.
Yeah, you know? Just my only not argument, but my only difference. The only difference I have is that I still think that those 3 or 4 songs can still carry it. Enough to sound, you know, like I agree with you 100% on it not being a Van Halen record. Eat 'Em and Smile, Dave's first solo record, was a fucking Van Halen record. He even went out and got Steve fucking Vai to play on it, for Christ's sakes. That's a Van Halen record. The videos were fun. That's a Van Halen record.
It was more of a natural evolution that if Van Halen had to continue with Dave in 1986.
Yeah,
it was much more of a natural evolution as to where Van Halen would have went had they kept Dave, had Dave not left. It would have sounded more like Eat 'Em and Smile.
I agree.
Than 5150.
I agree 100%.
But yeah, you know, I mean, look, it was a great album in 1986. I liked it. You know, I blasted the shit out of it. I mean, my first car, you know, that was one of my very first. Capes in my first car, you know, the summer I got my license. And it was a year later, but I mean, I was still playing it.
Absolutely. It was back then, a record was big for a year. Think of like the Def Leppard record. How they, that fucking album, they milked that album for like 2 years, didn't they?
Yeah, are you talking about Hysteria?
Yeah, they milked that thing for like 2 fucking years.
Yeah,
it was a very radio friendly record. So they just kept turning like fucking single.
Yeah, that was the trend in the 80s where, you know, and I think we've talked, I know I've talked about it. One of our past shows, I know when we had Alice Eccles on and we did the disco episode, and we brought that up where the trend in the 80s was where everything was album tour, album tour, album tour. And through the 70s and early 80s, you know,
yeah.
The record labels got greedy, and they saw what happened with Thriller, where Thriller had like 7 or 8, I don't remember what it was, 7 or 8 hit singles. They were all huge, and they started to milk the albums for as many singles as it could get. So where the run of an album was like, used to go from for like 6 months before you were ready for new product, the labels were milking the albums for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so you had albums like Born in the USA and An Innocent Man and Thriller and Bad and, you know,
1984.
There's all these albums that had like 5, 6, 7 hits on it. They're all like singles, you know. And Hysteria was part of that. You know, Hysteria had something like seven singles off of it.
I think what also helped Hysteria was that, you know, it was their first album back with Rick with, you know, losing his arm in a car accident. There was a lot of hype. There was a lot of hype built around that. And I think they really wanted to perfect that sound, which wasn't bad. It's not a horrible, it's not a horrible record. They wanted to perfect that sound and perfect every song on that record to try and, you know, put that product out.
I mean, can you imagine if they did that with, and this was kind of the very beginning of the trend before most bands and artists picked up on it, when Pyromania came out in 83. And by the time Pyromania was done on the charts, it was about a year. So, you know, you figure you had Photograph, Rock of Ages, and Foolin'. They had three singles released, and they all did pretty well, at least on MTV. I don't know what their numbers were on the pop charts, man, but, you know,
I think it was just starting to break then for rock getting into the pop charts. It was right on the cusp.
But what did they do after Pyromania? They had this little they had some time off from their tour.
Yep.
They released Me and My Wine on this re-released version of High and Dry. And then they, you know, Rick had the accident, and then they started recording Hysteria. Now imagine if they never went redid bringing on the Heartbreak and all that stuff. Imagine if, like, the label said, no, man, you're only halfway there. You've got three more singles to release. Go out on the road for another year, and we're going to keep Pyromania going. So they go. Imagine they go out and release, like, Too Late for Love, you know, and Die Hard the Hunter as singles, and now we've got, you know, it's that's basically what happened with Hysteria. Pretty much every other major artist in the 80s, the label just kept saying no, another single. If it's big, if it sells, we're going to keep pushing another one.
That could have changed the scope of that band dramatically. Maybe Rick's not in that car accident. Maybe they make another record, you know, sooner, and it's a flop. I mean,
because when you think about the trajectory of Pyromania on the charts, Pyromania, they get out of the whole Pyromania era again, maybe like a year after its release, you know, and meanwhile you have Thriller, you know, Michael Jackson. Thriller comes out maybe what, like a month before Pyromania, and Thriller's on the charts until like late 84.
Yeah.
You know, it had like a full two-year run on the charts. It definitely was a game changer. Not, you know, not just on MTV, but it just started so many trends for albums.
I agree.
Van Halen did the same thing, man, with, you know, OU812. I think but Van Halen was kind of following like the first they were going year by year. Each year they released an album, and then it was every 2 years for a while, and then they were going every 3 years.
I liked For Uncarnal Knowledge, or whatever the hell it was. Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. I liked that record a lot. And even Balance. I liked Balance a little bit. Amsterdam was a really cool song. The Sammy era for Van Halen is one of the stronger songs.
And yeah, you're not the only one that said that.
It's him showing off his pipes again, too. I think he kind of got a little fucking fed up with all the lovey-dovey stuff, because Eddie was still so in love with Val. And why can't this be love? And what's love? What is love? And fucking love thy neighbor. And love, 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 love. Fucking God almighty already.
Peter Cetera, man.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck.
Say, are you working? Van Halen's working with David Foster now.
Yeah.
No, but it was like,
you know, I just fucking found out who he's married to.
Who?
Foster.
Wait, David Foster?
Yeah.
What? Who?
He is married to fucking Catherine McPhee. She was an American Idol contestant or something, and then she went on to be like a singer / actress. She's like fucking 35 years younger than him or something, or 30 years younger than him.
Yeah,
I was fucking,
man,
blown away by that. You saw the Chicago documentary on Netflix, right?
Yeah. That's where I was just going. I was just going to go to the Chicago thing.
He was so fucking full of himself on that fucking thing. I was like, who would fuck this guy already? Okay, you wrote a couple of really good songs for Peter Cetera, but fuck off, man. Peter Cetera to me, I'm going to listen to a fucking Chicago record, and it might not even be him singing.
I just like the whole thing where, you know, Chicago goes from this really, like, heavy, serious rock band. And, you know, I mean, there's going to be people out there laughing, like metalheads are going to be like, oh, Chicago, oh, you know. But, I mean, I always say the first Chicago record sounds like MC5 with horns. It's heavy as fuck.
It's an awesome fucking album.
Yeah, it's like, it's just the sound of 1968. Now, it wasn't in 1968, but you know what I mean. If you, you know, it's just fucking crazy. But to go from that into, you know, we see what happens to Chicago in the 80s and
basically. Hard habit to break. You're a hard habit to break.
You know, it becomes his band, I guess, in a way,
yeah.
In the sense that, you know, he's making decisions and he's got the clout and he's got this and, well, I'm the, you know, and then you got David Foster defending it all, saying, well, look, they could say what they want. Look how many awards I have.
Yeah,
I've got 17
awards
on that shelf, and, you know. I'm like, oh, this is just what's wrong. This is just, it's just so everything wrong. Everything
yeah.
wrong with music is just encapsulated in that little clip, man.
Yeah.
You, sir, are not cool.
Now, I have not watched it yet, but there is a ZZ Top documentary on Netflix, which is in my queue and ready to go.
I haven't gotten to that yet.
Really looking for, excuse me, really looking forward to that. I've seen ZZ Top. One of the best three-piece bands I've ever seen live, ever, period, end of conversation. The fucking sound these three guys make is just so fat and heavy and crunchy, and I was blown away. They opened for fucking Kid Rock, of all people. They probably should have flipped that around, but album sales are album sales. ZZ Top fucking lifted the lid off of that place, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, man. You know, I'm trying to, well, I mean, until recently, I had my list, my short list, because the list of bands I haven't seen is far shorter than the list of the bands that I have seen. So it's a lot easier to make that list. And just a handful of acts, you know, I've been in the cleanup stages for the last decade, you know, just trying to avoid bands that I've seen a lot. You know, I keep passing on the Stones every time they play. I keep passing on Dylan, but you know, Steely Dan aside, I'm trying to see bands that I haven't seen yet. And, you know, I missed Rush. I didn't get to see Rush.
Unfortunately.
I never got to see AC/DC. But ZZ Top is not one I really get. I totally just, like, forgot about ZZ Top. You know, and it's probably a band that, you know, I guess I would like to see.
They're an interesting group, man. And it's not only the stuff like when we were teenagers, like the Eliminator record or something like that. You know, you got to go further back than that, man. Whenever if they're doing Nationwide, I'm Bad, I'm Nationwide, holy Christ, man. You're just like, yeah. These guys are on, man. They are on. They are fucking on. For a three-piece, they are tight. I mean, and, hey, don't get me wrong. I've seen Rush a gazillion times. Love the band. God bless. God rest the soul of Neil Peart. He's with his family now. And just that man has been through so much. But – you know, it's a different environment seeing Rush versus ZZ Top, and I, man, they're one of the best fucking three-piece acts I've seen. They're up there.
Yeah, I've never heard anything bad about, like, heard anything bad said about them live.
You might hear my dog crying, because we're doing this, like you said, over the phone, and now my dog decided to start whining for some reason. What are you doing, dog? Go lay down.
So what else is good on Netflix, man? The Chasing Train and Birth of the Cool, which are basically the John Coltrane and Miles Davis.
Right, right.
These are really, really good. The History of Chicago.
Yeah, that's a great one. I have on my queue also the Mad Dogs and what do you call it? Joe Cocker. The Joe Cocker one is on there. And that's in my queue. I have not watched that yet. You know what I've been, it's not music related. I've been addicted to that fucking Tiger King documentary. I might watch it again. That's how good it was.
Wait, what is it?
The Tiger King, the guy down south in like Oklahoma had a zoo. He's a gay fucking zoo owner, rebel fucking, I can't even describe what it is. It's just, watch it. It's unfucking believable that people like in the world.
I just watched, and it's not, I guess it's not really music related. I mean, but although it does have a pretty good soundtrack for what the limited music that's in it. But I saw Knives Out. I finally saw Knives Out on, it wasn't Netflix, it was Amazon, but This movie that came out in November that the critics, a lot of people were raving about this movie, and I finally watched it, and it is easily the best movie I've seen in like 25, maybe 30 years, man. I watched it like 4 times in 1 week.
My mother saw it. She said she liked it a lot. I do want to see it. I'll eventually watch it.
I can't rave about it enough. Dr. Sleep, man, I loved it.
Yeah, it was really good. I dug it a lot. He really did a good job filming that. You know who played Jack in that, right?
You told me this. Like the last time I talked to you, and you told me this, and I was like, oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah, Henry Thomas? Is that who I said it was?
Whatever, the kid from E.T.,
the kid from
right?
E.T., yeah, I think his name was Henry Thomas. I was fucking blown away by that, man. That whole bar scene, I was like, man, did they fucking recreate that? And, you know it wasn't Jack, but you're like, it eerily represented Jack. It was fucking cool. So cool.
Yeah, I guess they kept him in a younger form, you know? And I was kind of curious as to how they were going to address the Halloran situation, being that, you know, he died.
Yeah.
And, you know, wow, how come this young guy is playing him, and obviously it's a ghost.
Yep. Yep.
And, yeah, you know, I mean, it's... I loved it. I can't say enough about it. There was one scene that I thought was really corny and unnecessary, you know, and that's the scene. I guess everybody's seen it, so I don't want to be like, you know, just like, okay, spoiler alert. Turn your volume down for the next 30 seconds if you haven't seen this. But the scene on the stairs right after, you know, Rose the Hat and Danny go down the stairs and they get to that landing and all of the ghosts come out at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of corny, you know, and they're like, okay. Hello, Danny, you know, and then after they kind of like eat her or do whatever they do with her, they get rid of Rose the Hat, then they turn around and they look like, hello, Danny. Like, that was just so corny, man. You know,
okay, I'll give you
it's like, that was just such cheese. But I was just like, but I was like, you know what? He gets a pass because the way he recreated the hotel and the tracking shots and just, my favorite part of the whole movie, you'll never guess it. So I might as well just tell you.
I'm going to tell you mine. It might be the same.
Okay. What is it?
The aerial shot. It almost looked like an opening of a new movie again. And
are you talking about when it's going over the water, which is
and they're climbing the mountain already, and the music is the same, and it almost jumped into a new film, and I got goosebumps from it.
It became another film, and that was my favorite part where they're at the gas station and it's snowing.
Yep.
And he kind of looks out there, both looking out the window. They're looking at the car window, and he's like, "We're almost there."
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it cuts to that the tracking shot over the water where you see that little island in the middle of the water, the first frame of The Shining.
Yep.
And it recreates that tracking shot, but it's night. That's the part that I love about it. You're going back through the mountains. It's like recreating the driving scene through the mountains, but it's night.
Yeah.
You know,
He gets the filmmaker.
Yeah, you've got like that haunting white glow in the dark.
That's crazy that we both agreed on that same shot. I think we both, the first movie is so near and dear to both of us.
The parts that are going to appeal to Kubrick freaks and, you know, Shining fans or whatever. But that was it. You know, that was, I was just like, oh my God, you know, it was just, I could not say, and, you know, and I'll admit, I watched that thing 3 fucking times. In the same week. I watched it 3 nights in a row. I was like, I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. And I ever imagined I would. You know, I was just like, this is going to be stupid. I'll watch it. And I really just kind of, I think you talked about it a lot when the book came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I haven't been able to read fiction for, since the 80s. You know, but just because of the way my interest kind of shifted and evolved over the years. And now, again, like I haven't been able to read anything because any reading I do for the last 3 years has been related to this book project and everything is research. So now that I'm finally done with that, now I'm kind of like spreading out a little bit more. And then here's this movie that comes out. I was like, all right, I'll see it. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, you know, this is like... you know, I mean, yeah, some of the critics were like, yeah, was the last 45 minutes necessary? No, it really wasn't. But, you know,
it kind of laid out in the book more. I mean, I thought it was necessary. I disagree with the critics on that. I totally do. They just like the bash of King films.
No, but I think what they were talking about was like there was just like this just real gratuitous 35 minutes of just like designed for people like you and me. You know,
right.
We're just going to be like get caught up in seeing the Overlook Hotel again for the first time in 40 years and what it looks like. And we're going to forget that there's this movie called Dr. Sleep.
I'll tell you why I didn't, because I knew the director going into it. I was doing a lot of reading on this. I was very excited about this film coming out. He approached Stephen King with the idea, knowing that King notoriously does not like Kubrick's vision of the show.
Right, right.
But the way he presented it to King, King fell in love with it. He was like, yeah, I'm on board. I like the idea a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And he lacked his, I don't want to say hatred, his disliking towards Kubrick's edition a little bit. And I think that made the process go that much smoother. And to have King on board and to love that the way he did, I was excited for it. I was like, wow, well, if he's on board with it, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I was blown away by the way he just recreated that whole thing, the whole
yeah,
architectural layout of the hotel.
He nailed it.
He summed everything up. There was a few times where I kind of wished he hadn't shown faces. You know, like you see like Danny and Wendy sitting on the couch. You see them from the back.
Yeah.
You know, I think they just showed faces a little bit too much.
Okay.
You know, where you're asking people to accept these new faces where, you know, you have these indelible images for the past 40 years that are kind of like sealed and burned into our mind's eye. And then here's this other person we're supposed to think he's, I don't
know. Torrance.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing, the great party, isn't it, guy? You know, he didn't have the accent this time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm just, you know, now I'm nitpicking, but it was, you know, I did love the movie, though.
I said perhaps they need to be corrected.
And the girl they got for Abra, she was badass, man. She was badass. She was. I did like the story. I kind of thought that one of the things I was kind of afraid of was that, you know, I'm going to be tolerating the movie until the last 35 minutes, like, let's just get to the Overlook, and I wasn't feeling that at all.
That's good.
You know, the movie kept my interest. I, you know, the characters, again, they got a really good person to play that part. I didn't read the book. I don't know what she's like in the book.
No, she was good. Rose the Hat was perfectly cast. Absolutely.
Yeah.
150%, I think, perfectly cast. And her henchman, I can't remember his name. But he was really good too, because he was, you know, responsible for the boy. I mean, he was a heavy character, man. And when he went down, it was cool, man.
I was cringing a little bit when they tortured that kid.
Yeah,
you know, like that was a little bit too much. I was just like, oh man, this is kind of, you know.
It was worse than the book.
Yeah. I believe, because King is relentless, man. Stephen King is relentless.
He wants to, you know, he taps into that. He taps into that area of your mind, and he just won't let go. He grabs a hold. Once he chisels through, he gets a hold of it, and it's just like, fuck, man. Wow, dude. There's people like this in the world.
Yeah. I don't know. What else? You know, I'm glad we're talking about this, man. Maybe we just, like, have, like, a no-holds-barred whatever. For a while, like, we were becoming the death podcast. Like, for a while, like, we were becoming, like, the Death Report podcast because everybody was dying.
We've only mentioned Neil once. This will be the second time, third time in the podcast.
Right. That was kind of how the year started, because that was like in early January. I can't believe, man, long ago already.
He had a rough go with it, you know, losing family members and stuff. So.
Yeah. He lost like his wife
and then his kid. Yep.
Right. He wrote a book about that. Going out on the road and just doing a Kerouac thing across America, kind of kind of therapeutic for him. And he wrote a book about that, which it's been on my list for a couple of years. Like I said, my thing with books lately, but I would like to read that book.
I should probably
at some point.
He did that. He was on the back of a bike doing a lot of that. Even when they were touring, he'd take motorcycle rides for hours. They had that on Netflix, too. The Rush documentary was on Netflix, I think, for a little bit, which was really good. You know, they knew that last tour, when they said farewell tour, those three knew. And their tight-knit group knew that he was sick. There's not a doubt in my mind that they didn't know that he was sick. And this was like their final thing for the fans and for everybody
else.
Yeah,
yeah, it's very, very possible. You know, they like, we're not saying anything, but this may be it, you know? And just kind of maybe he'd be going through. Well, I can't say, no, he couldn't have been going through therapy at that point, the treatment.
Right.
At that
it would have
point,
been 2 weeks.
On the road, yeah.
Maybe it was so bad he decided not to go through therapy, though. Some people do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. He lived out the remaining days of his life the way he wanted to, and he toured, and then that was it. And then at the end, he just broke down and said, I'm done.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, hey, God bless him for that, man.
Yeah.
They are heavy in my rotation right now.
Yeah. But anyway, man, it's been almost an hour, you know, so I don't know if you want to break for now, and...
Yeah, this is probably for a return episode. This is a good return episode.
I guess for those that are just joining us, if you somehow managed to find this and you're still with us, you're listening to the Rock Under Fire podcast. And we've been up and running on iTunes. Well, I guess, what is it now? Apple Podcasts and YouTube and something called Stitcher. And, of course, rockunderfire.com. For the better part of 4 years now. And although we've been on a rather long extended break for the past year, we're not totally out of commission. We have an entire archive of past shows that you can go to and revisit.
We are on
Discover for the first time. But obviously the reason we're here now doing this return episode,
the world sucks.
People are paranoid. They're bored. They're freaking out.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can get some laughter. You get some laughter or some comfort out of us fucking talking for an hour.
This is true, man. The world needs distraction. So if this takes you out of the prison of your own minds for at least an hour a week, then I guess we've done something good, Pat.
Don't let that get out.
What's that?
Don't let that get out, that I've done something good.
We've done something good, man. I guess we'll try to do this on a semi-regular basis until the situation is I don't want to say over. I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. But, you know, there's no strict or set schedule for this whenever we can do this. I guess some days I might even be joined by Stick Nixon. You know, we've had other co-hosts here and there. You know, Marissa's always one of my favorite partners in crime when it comes to music. So, I mean, we'll manage to get this together with us, if not all of us, however we can do that, you know, on some sort of a regular schedule if people want to hear it.
Sure.
You know, does that mean that Rock Under Fire is back for good? We're back for now. Right? So, and now is all we have. So that's about as good as it gets, folks. And if you're new to the show, hit subscribe, follow us on whatever format you're listening to us on. Find us on Facebook. Feel free to comment on anything you want us to talk about. You know, we're coming to you without our regular format, you know, meaning, you know, we had no intention of doing this podcast anytime soon. But under the circumstances, you know, here we are. So give us your topic ideas or requests to pull us all out of the abyss for an hour a week. You'll be doing your job too, you know, if we've managed to take you out of the negative realm of gloom and doom, or if you, you know, just like music discussion, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I want to throw a shout out to one of our listeners who,
absolutely.
Yeah. He always is behind us. He's always saying what he's doing it again. What's going on with the show? Rob Tobin has been a follower and ally to us from day one. And just want to acknowledge Rob Tobin for that.
One of our biggest supporters. Maybe our biggest supporter.
Yeah.
And always sharing the shows, man. He actually leaked one of our shows once, man. the only time a fan ever leaked our show, man. Remember that?
Yep.
No, Rob's great, man. Rob's great. In fact, we had a really – I mean, probably like the last hurrah, man, until – God Knows When was Rob's party. It was Rob's birthday party.
Yep.
You know, it was a really great night. The last time I probably saw anybody.
Yeah, I don't think
I was out one other time after that, but yeah. So yeah, shout out to Rob, man. And
thanks again, brother. Rock on.
So yeah, again, you like what you heard, share this episode, spread the word, and we'll catch you next time.
Sounds good,
by the way, Pat, dude, you got any toilet paper?
Pouring on me, man.